Welcome, listeners, to A Night of Shreds and Patches, an immersive actual play podcast. This episode features the talents of
Penn Van Batavia as Marathon Messenger and Gwendolyn Rosenthal.
Kit Adamus as Birdie Foundling and Voss Foundling.
Cameron Robertson as Emma Blackwood and Janus Foundling.
Sydney Whittington as Cassidy Shard and
Winifred Foundling.
Nick Robertson as GM and narrator.
Hello, listeners. This is your editor, Sydney, with today's messages. Wait, hold on. Hey, have we seen the announcement fairy tonight? Crap. We didn't limp out any offerings for her. I guess, no announcements today. We'll have to leave out extra next time so she's not mad at us. And if you want to help contribute to the Fae offering pool, consider backing our Patreon, which gives you access to bonus episodes, campfire conversations, and other fun rewards, in addition to making sure that we stay on good terms with our local Fae. And with that, we wrap up today's no announcements and head into Season 3, Episode 49, Not Suspicious at All. And so, join us. For now, our tale to yours attaches. To carry hope, a night of shreds and patches.
Systems online, reconfiguring audio connection.
Last time on A Night of Shreds and Patches, we fucking took down this kill box. Some mercenaries were set up trying to take us out, and Cassidy, like, shot him up right in front of my face. Oh, my God. That was actually kind of brutal and kind of scary. And Birdie and Emma comboed to take out some gunners up front before doing some cool-ass baseball trick with the bomb, like, right into a machine gun nest and blew him up. And then I came swooping in, sliced one guy, beat up another, and then I'm keeping my guy alive on the ground. And I did all that fucking while I was shot. I was shot, and I did all that. Meanwhile, Birdie is shot, too. Well, she was doing all that, which is arguably more impressive because she was more shot than I am. If you can be more shot, can you be more shot? Anyway, I'm on the hype, and I don't know how much I got left, but we're heading down to the bottom of Sassnack to get the city started again so that the stability of the city comes back. And, hey, is somebody aiming at Birdie?
The city of Sassnack is being torn apart by conflict. It is stopped in its tracks. The taller towers are shaking and falling, and the streets are filled with mercenaries and bandits and security, all fighting from corner to corner and alley to alley. The Patina finds themselves at the tail end of one of these conflicts they've settled themselves. Marathon finds herself standing amongst the shot and unconscious bandits. Cassidy is in a window overlooking this grisly scene, having fired into the conflict to protect Marathon. And Emma is crouched in an alleyway, having taken out a bandit herself. Birdie, you were just saved by a bullet shot from a direction you were not expecting. The last mercenary has fallen, and now you find yourself looking down the barrel of a gun. Karma is outside of easy talking range, and she doesn't lower the gun as quickly as you would expect. You find yourself still within the crosshairs.
As soon as Emma hears the shot, she takes off towards Birdie to help be a crutch.
Birdie, you see Karma standing there with her dress uniform on that she had been wearing to escort the parade, now disheveled. And the gun is not aimed directly at you, but it is still shouldered and pointed down the street in your general direction. Her braids are down in her face. She takes the hand not on the trigger guard up to move her braids out of her face before tightening back up.
Birdie is in minor shell shock from what has just happened in front of her, and her first instinct towards Karma is not fear or honestly any sort of self-preservation. She takes a few steps towards Karma, and her body language shows that she's incredibly relieved, especially as she leans some of her weight off of her injured leg and allows herself to look as injured as she is now that there's no more hostiles to her knowledge around them. And she'll call down the alley, "Karma, thank you."
And Karma will hold on to that inscrutable expression as she slowly moves maybe 10 yards closer, putting them into more of a casual, if loud, conversation range.
Probably at this point, if Emma's very first thing to do was sprint to Birdie, has gotten to Birdie by now.
Emma gets to Birdie's side and scoops her arm on her injured side, kind of like she's going to link elbows with her, but starts pulling up some of Birdie's weight from that point to be an additional stable upright source that she can lean on to keep additional weight off of her leg.
Birdie's a little surprised by this, as she is really confused as to why Karma looks as armed and as antagonistic as she currently does. She'll adjust her arm to fit Emma's help a little bit better and go, "Karma, are you okay?"
"A lot of mercenaries out here causing problems in my city. What are you doing?"
Trying to fend him off, I guess, same as you. I don't want him here either."
Karma looks down at the blood-wrapped bandages of Birdie's leg. "You should get that looked at."
"I'll be fine for right now. We have everything to do. There's too much happening. Can you put your gun down?"
Karma brings it across her chest. It's still shouldered and able to be drawn up, but it's not aimed.
Emma is just looking concernedly between Birdie's face and Karma in the distance.
"Why are you out? It's dangerous."
"Why am I out? Because we're capable of helping, of trying to mitigate everything that's happening. And this is what we do. This is our job. This is my job."
"Your job is to work for Opal."
"No, it's... what? What are you even... what?"
"As far as I can tell, Opal is the one behind all of this, and you work for her. You're some of her most trusted contractors."
"That's a pretty big accusation, Karma. Can..."
"You were on her parade float accepting a trophy in her honor just hours ago."
"Yeah, the team is sponsored by her."
"You can't tell me you don't work for her."
Emma says under her breath to Birdie, "I do think technically our contract is finished."
Birdie, in response to Emma, will squeeze her shoulder in thanks because she is pretty scatterbrained right now. She'll nod a little bit at what Emma says as also just the go-ahead because she's not going to be the most eloquent of people right now.
"Colonel? She Colonel?"
"Yeah, Colonel."
"Hello, Colonel Karma. As Birdie is dealing with blood loss, I'm going to share the technical details of the arrangement. Our contract is complete as we did finish the X-Bike Championships with Opal. We are no longer under her employment. We weren't employees. We were contractors. We're no longer receiving money from her? Benefits?"
"Yeah."
"Convenient timing."
It is when the race ended, ma'am. We struck our initial agreement with Opal for the X-Bike sponsorship, so that concluded when the championship was complete."
Why is this anything to you, Karma?"
"You don't think that being in league with the counselor who brought in a bunch of mercenaries from outside of the city to take over the city, being mercenaries from outside of the city, would be concerning?"
"Do you think I wanted this?"
"Money changes a lot."
"Huh."
"I know the Foundlings have been in conflict with the city before."
"We have not been in conflict with the city before.
A lot of foundling records say otherwise.
You're levying a lot against people you don't really know. You don't know what our intentions.
And Birdie is obviously getting more tense as she's starting to snark at Karma.
Marathon has slowly been gliding up, fairly silently, up behind where Karma is in position, and is going to try and lock eyes with Emma and Birdie as she approaches behind Karma.
Marathon, I'm going to need you to make a stealth check to see if you're able to sneak up on Karma. It'll be a contested roll, so you'll be rolling against two reds and a purple, because I think Karma is pretty goddamn vigilant.
Marathon is rolling two greens against two reds and a purple.
You should probably flip a story point.
I'm going to flip a story point to ensure that one of those greens becomes a yellow. So then now I'm rolling a green and a yellow versus two red and a purple. Four failures and three advantages.
That's good. So I would say probably the advantages is that Karma doesn't snap fire and shoot her immediately. So Marathon is attempting to sneak up on Karma to provide cover for Emma and Birdie. What happens that just completely blows her cover? What loud noise does she make? What happens that just makes this completely unsneaky?
Birdie, as she's sort of ranting and starting to properly argue with Karma, has caught Marathon trying to sneak up on Karma, but she does not quite realize that she's trying to be sneaky, and obviously lets her gaze drift from where it is on Karma over to Marathon, and she just waves her hand off in kind of like a no go gesture and doesn't realize the potential outcome of her actions because she's in shock.
Emma had been subtly shaking her head, trying to deter Marathon after she spotted her. And when Birdie does this large gesticulation, Emma just clamps her mouth shut and just straight line face of, well, never mind. It's fine.
I think in that same split second, Marathon is gonna just slightly hesitate and freeze up as Karma maybe scans.
Karma sees both people that she's interviewing react and follows their gazes over her shoulder to where Marathon had been making eye contact with the two of them.
Marathon stands frozen.
Karma gestures with her rifle to get out from where she's sneaking and go down to the rest of the Patna. Not suspicious at all. There's at least one more,
this,
you.
Okay, just hold on.
Birdie will shake her head and scrub her hand across her face as she's trying to clear her head.
Why? Have you always been suspicious of me?
I knew you were working for Opal. That doesn't need suspicion until a counselor starts making moves like this.
How would we have known?
Because you work for her and you're part of this.
Why would we be privy? Why would we be privy to anything that she does?
Because you're mercenaries from outside of the city.
Oh my god.
And this is that takeover.
This is my city, too.
We've been here for months.
Nothing bad has happened. If I would have suspected anything of what of this level, of any sort of security threat, I would have told you. You would have been the first person that I went to.
Then let's say this.
Also, you missed us taking out the sniper machine gun nest of the other mercenaries.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And getting shot in the process. And Emma gestures with her non-supporting Birdie arm to Birdie and Marathon, where she's approaching.
And Marathon has stayed in place on the opposite side of Karma for now. Maybe heightening tensions, but keeping her focus split.
Karma takes four steps backwards to get them both more in her field of view. If you're entirely innocent and you have nothing to do with any of this, Then come back with me to the ramp and help us defend the city. We have to get everyone we can down there.
Well, we've got a mission that's just as important right now. And it's, can we just say it?
I bet it's just as important, and it's for Opal.
Karma.
And it's to take over the city by doing whatever.
Well, I don't understand.
I'm giving you an out, Birdie.
I don't understand why you think I'd...
We're gonna go restart the city. Downstairs, in the guts. That's the plan.
Bullshit.
I don't know the science to it. Emma, can you describe it?
You really need to pick better romantic partners, Birdie.
Okay. Yes, we're restarting the city, okay?
During this conversation, Cassidy has been sneaking her way through the building at a much slower pace than Marathon took, not having heard any more gunshots, but she is concerned that she hasn't seen any of her teammates come back around the corner.
Are you, like, trying to get up onto a roof or see out a window, or where are you trying to sneak to?
She's going to the other side of the building that she was already in to hit the sniper's nest, so she's probably on, like, the second floor, but just going to, like, the far side to look out a new window.
Okay. Go ahead and make me a stealth check. It'll be contested against Karma again, which is two reds and a purple, but you can have two blue die because you're not in direct line of sight.
So because Cassidy is back in her not disco ball outfit, her default clothes have a +1 difficulty to spot. So that'll upgrade one of my stealth dice, giving me an end pool of 3 yellows and 2 greens against 2 reds and a purple, plus the 2 blues. 2 successes, 4 advantages.
Okay, so Karma isn't going to notice that you're there, and I think with the advantages, if you decide to act, you'll have the drop on her. You'll have some extra blue die on whatever you're trying to do from here.
Cassidy works her way up to a window and carefully keeps her silhouette out of the frame, but manages to crack it so that she can hear the conversation going on.
Birdie is getting more and more frustrated as this goes on. She's clenching her fists over and over again while going,
"Maybe I haven't always been completely honest with you, but yes, we're restarting the city. We need to, because we have the ability to, and I don't."
So do the city maintenance crews. We get the right people down there, we clear all the mercenaries out, we can do it ourselves. It'll take a couple days.
They won't do it in time.
What is in time? They're not going to take the ramp, especially if you go down there and help.
I
don't even know, would we even be trustworthy on the ramp?
Yeah.
If we're not trustworthy unless you could watch us, then we're just in close quarters with you.
You'd be in front of our guns. Easy.
And as I understand it, it's every second that we're not moving, the city's not moving, things are becoming destabilized.
Yeah.
I think that's the rush.
Also, call anyone. Call the first sword.
Maybe not the first sword.
Call Counselor Wander. We're not working for Opal.
I'm sorry for sneaking up on you, by the way. I didn't mean to escalate the situation.
Just stop. Just Karma, I grew up here. This is my home. You've known me since I was a stupid teenager. Why the hell would I do something like this to destroy the place that I love for money? You think I'm that shallow?
I think it's probably time for a charm check.
What's my difficulty?
Let's do 2 reds and a purple again.
Can I have a blue die for flirting with her for a couple months?
Yes, you can have a blue die. I would say this is probably a collaborative check, so if anybody can lend you...
I can offer you, I believe, a blue die in this trying time.
Oh, I've got a presence 3 and 3 in charm, but I'm not very charming in this situation, so I'm going to refuse to add to it.
We'll say 3 blue die. 2 blue die for pre-existing relationship, 1 blue die for your friends trying to help with the conversation.
Birdie is rolling 2 yellow, 1 green, 3 blue, 2 reds, and 1 purple. 4 successes and 3 threats.
Wow. So, Karma, the points that they are making make sense, and you're starting to come around to this logic. And with all of those threats, Birdie, I think you start to lose consciousness as your heart rate is up, as you're attempting to persuade this person that you've spent quite a lot of time with and is being very suspicious of you.
I'm not.
not that shell.
Oh, okay, we're going down.
Oh, Birdie, you okay?
Emma slowly drops to a knee to help lower Birdie's weight down to the ground. And then as soon as she's down on the ground, she starts applying pressure to her leg again where the wounds were.
And Marathon loses all concern over this situation and starts gliding quickly over to Birdie.
Karma, you can't help but feel that you've somehow lost control of this situation.
Birdie!
Marathon, could you grab her backpack for me?
Yeah. Do you need the bandages?
Yes.
Yep, here you go. Marathon starts digging.
Karma's going back through the information, trying to, if she takes that their contract with Opal has expired, does that change things enough that she thinks that she doesn't have to basically assume that they're criminals immediately? Even if this story about trying to restart Sasnak seems very like a bad lie.
One thing that you can't help but notice is that whatever you believe about restarting the city, what Marathon said about the city being destabilized and that being a rush, there are periodic rumblings and the sound of squealing metal as bits of the city continue to collapse in upon itself. Something about the city stopping has, in fact, destabilized quite a bit, and you suspect it's only going to get worse the longer the city isn't rolling.
What can I hold, Emma?
Here, can you apply pressure right here, and then
yep.
I can prep the bandages. Okay.
Okay, perfect.
Karma is being completely ignored by the Patina down here, at least now, while we just do wound work on Birdie.
You're coming back. Gonna say hi to your sisters. You got this, Birdie. Come on.
Marathon, it's fine. She just lost a lot of blood. She's fine.
She's not dying?
She's fine. She's gonna be okay. She just got really agitated and has a massive leg wound.
Okay, if you say so. Marathon looks very worried.
I do. She'll probably walk normally again.
And blood is trickling from her arm wound into Birdie's leg bandages now.
Karma is just sitting and watching the team actions happening, because regardless of whose side they're on or what their raider goals are, there is no potential of hurting people as they're tending to someone that she is rather fond of in the middle of the street. And she keeps an ear out for anything else approaching.
And Birdie, you regain consciousness. You probably don't feel very good at this point.
Ugh.
Good morning.
Birdie, never one to be kept down, does manage to yank her eyes open after a couple of these moments have passed. And she acknowledges what's happening with her wound and then goes, hi.
Good morning.
You're alive. Whew.
Did I, like, pass out?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Very scary line.
Very dramatic. It was mid-sentence. It was very dramatic.
Oh, thank you.
Marathon, could you support her back and help her sit up while I finish wrapping this?
Yep, I got you. Hey, our blood mix.
Okay. What kind of blood do you have, Marathon?
Oh, and Karma's still here, by the way.
Ah, balls. Okay.
Birdie peeks around Marathon's shoulder up and over to look at Karma, and then we'll settle back down because straightening up that much is a little uncomfortable.
And Marathon's helping prop her up now.
Karma gives her that bird head tilt as she briefly makes eye contact.
You could at least say you're sorry for making me pass out.
The shot in your leg made you pass out. I already told you to get care.
You were pissing me off.
You know who has good care? The doctors on the ramp.
I think I resent that statement. I think we did a great job.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Emma is finishing tying off the much tighter bandage now.
Ow! Thank you.
No. Look, Colonel, we don't have time to go down to the ramp right now, okay? We've got a very important mission in the guts right now.
You couldn't be trusted to do that even if there wasn't an active battle on the ramp that could use more guns.
Birdie will use Marathon somewhat like a lever to pull herself to where she can make eye contact with Karma and narrow her eyes and say,
then come with us. Hmm? Then see what we're doing.
Karma in her head is going through the, if they're not up to anything, then this is safety for the thing that would restart the city. If they are up to something, theoretically, having herself with them would make that harder, if not impossible. And if they wanted her dead, the fourth member of their team, at least, who she hasn't yet seen, would probably have already shot her. And Karma tilts her head the other direction. Okay, fine.
Fine.
I will.
Great.
All right, I guess let's do this.
Great.
Birdie, you want to piggyback? Sounds like the best course of action.
That would be very painful.
Terrible for her leg and for your arm, Marathon.
Oh, well, my arm is mostly fine. It's just bleeding and won't stop. But
can you
rotate so I can get to your other arm, Marathon?
Okay.
Birdie is going to push herself away from Emma and Marathon so that Emma can patch up Marathon a little better and get herself up using Marathon's shoulder of her good arm. She's just using Marathon right now to stand up and go over to Karma.
You're really not one of Opal's secret pawns?
No, and I resent the idea that you would ever think that I would be so compliant to a counselor's needs like that, or wants, or their whatever stupid thing they want people to do for money.
You've done a lot of jobs for her.
We've done two.
How many X-Bike races was that?
X-Bike races? Okay, you're being pedantic. Pedantic? Whatever. I know that the city is your first priority, and its security is your first priority. So if you're gonna come with us, then just please know that it's mine, too. That's my priority as well. And that this is my way of helping fix things. Okay?
Karma takes a deep breath in and out. Okay. I'll protect you.
While that conversation is happening, Emma has taken advantage of the fact that Birdie is now distracting Karma, and Emma and Marathon are down on the ground working with the bandages and stuff, so Karma can't really see what's going on. And Emma turns her radio on, knowing that Cassidy's going to be the only one who has her radio actually turned on, and says,
"So I would like to do a proposition that every time she makes some snarky comment about us working for Opal, I get to hit her with my sword."
That does seem like it would be
over quickly.
I think so too. To our trying,
yeah,
seen Emma sword. Not to piss off the Framp girls and be thrown out of the city before we can accomplish saving the city.
I mean, as long as I hit her in the right spot, she won't be able to tell anybody.
Damn, Emma.
What?
I'm very callous today.
She's very fucking annoying.
Marathon just holds her arms up and her hands up by her face.
Put your arm back down. I am working on that, Marathon.
And then realizes she's lifted her arm, has to lift it back down.
I don't think I can approve of Birdie dating her.
About harsher women.
I think she needs to go to therapy. I don't think this is healthy. Birdie needs someone who trusts her, and I think that something probably burned Karma really bad in the past, and she has yet to deal with that, and it's showing really big in her human interactions.
We can counsel Birdie on her relationship choices and the improvements to be made there once we've saved the city.
Cassie, are you coming out? Are you gonna trail?
Yeah, once we start moving.
Okay.
You gotta watch out, because if you come out, then she might think you're working for Opal. And then we might have to restart this conversation again.
We were working for Opal.
And so the Patina joins up with Karma, and they continue their way through the city, heading towards the Guts and their meetup with Juno. Throughout the city, we see different pockets of resistance against this mercenary threat put on by the citizenry of Sasnak traveling. We see the Mountain of a Man, Atlas Bloodfeast, in a stand-up running battle against a whole platoon of mercenaries. He is streaked with gore and wielding his battle axe, charging through the streets. And before long, we see that he has broken the morale of his opponents and they are running from him as he cackles loudly, portraying a bloodthirsty warrior, which is not his actual personality, but is one that he puts on to scare his opponents. Where do we see Janice fighting in a pocket of the city? What is she doing?
Janice is using her sci-fi powers for good, possibly for once. And the scene that we see is another machine gun nest, like the one that Patina just took on, but it's still full of living mercenaries. They aren't actively shooting at anyone at the moment. they're waiting for unsuspecting people to walk up their street. So we're just watching slice of life mercenary for a moment. And then suddenly Janus glitches into the middle of this nest. And we see that she has upgraded the croquet mallet of her youth to a double-headed warhammer. She obviously glitches in the kneeling superhero pose and is wearing all black, so she blends into the ground, and then she stands and becomes a whirlwind of blunt force trauma with her warhammer. And then once she has completed her mission, she returns back to superhero pose and glitches back out of existence.
Further out in the city, where do we find Gwendolyn? What is the first sword doing to defend the city?
Gwendolyn's heavy, shiny armor is just soaked in blood right now, and she has got her scowl on as she pulls her giant sword out from someone behind her and in one fluid motion just sweeps it into another mercenary as she walks down the ramp being flooded with mercenaries, both firing and coming at her with melee attacks of many kinds. She takes a moment to use one finger to wipe blood from her eye, and sparks fly as a bullet hits her near the shoulder, bouncing off her armor, and she just directs her glare that way before starting to sprint down the ramp even further.
Away from the ramp and further into the city, we see Rai and the security forces that he had secured the loyalty of earlier. They are mounting a siege on a building that had been taken over by mercenaries. You can see Rai is standing on a crate and pointing and giving direction as the security forces set up some sort of catapult made out of scrap, and they are preparing to breach the door. Rai is giving last minute advice to his troops and preparing to charge in and clear this building one way or the other. He appears to be in his element leading this group and seems a lot more self-assured than we've seen him in the past, as though he has been forged in the fire of conflict and come out the other side stronger.
We move to the door of the biggest ag dome. We see Councillor Rodriguez, his long shaggy hair tied back with a blue bandana, as he issues orders to barricade the door. A mercenary outside the dome approaches, and Rodriguez flinches as the mercenary fires, but the noise of the shot isn't heard and the bullet just ricochets, and Rodriguez goes back to making sure that they can't get open the door. As long as that's true, they're safe unless they commit to a long siege or find another way in.
And towards the center of the city, in a rare pocket of quiet, we see Maria Bliss having organized a triage camp away from the fighting. People are being dragged in on stretchers. We see groups of drain boys running out to go and find other injured and bring them back. Maria's in her element organizing patches and patients both, making sure that people are taken care of and that as many lives are saved as possible. She takes a minute to wipe the sweat from her brow and take a deep breath and looks wistfully towards the sky. And you can tell from her facial expression that she's worried about where her family is right now, but that they have to take care of themselves just like she's taking care of herself until she can get back to them.
We cut over to a street near the administrative center of Sasnak, where a small hot dog cart has been ransacked by two mercenaries. A camera focuses on them from the corner of a nearby building. And down the street, a streetlight suddenly bursts. The shattering of glass pulls the attention of the mercenaries, and they look at each other and quickly spread out to move down the street to see what caused the noise. Behind them, we see Winifred looking up from a tablet and letting it swing along a strap over one shoulder, an overcurrent bypass command replaced by a lock screen. In a clingy white sweater dress and tall black boots, with a wide black belt and a large black satchel, having just come from work, she quietly makes her way across the street holding a small pistol in her other hand that normally lives attached to the underside of the desk in her personal office. She slides through an alley and comes up to a door on the building that holds the council meeting rooms. She holds her tablet up to a keypad reader and hits a button, and it opens immediately. It seems this was something that she had previously prepared to get access to, and she slips inside.
We see dark figures hopping across building roofs and through the eaves, swinging on rickety bridges that have fallen and bouncing off of scattered debris that has been created by the city stopping. As they hop between buildings and rooftops, we see the scavengers decked out in their punk outfits and their twisted metal gear. They jump down onto these mercenaries with small knives, blades, large blades of different types as well, silently taking them out and protecting their city in their own way. We see one pink mohawk in particular moving quickly and directing these figures from one of the rooftops.
It is through countless scenes like this that the Patna and Karma make their way as they attempt to get to the Guts and rendezvous with Juno.
Welcome back, folks. You're tuned to Going the Distance, Traveler's Guide on Road Dial 1558. That's a wrap on today's log, and we're set to loop after these considerations. Further detail for the following is cataloged in the show notes. This has been A Night of Shreds and Patches, an actual play podcast using the Genesis game system from Fantasy Flight Games. The show is edited by Sydney Whittington and features the talents of Kit Adamus as Birdie. Kit can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Venus Vultures. Kit is also a voice actor for Elevator Pitch Podcast, a queer genre-hopping anthology podcast that can be accessed on Spotify and YouTube. Pen Van Batavia as Marathon. She can be found on Twitter at Acquired Chaste and in drag as Horror King John on Instagram at john.is.risen. Pen is an indie TTRPG designer whose most recent work includes Slice It Out, a grisly carving RPG about cutting pieces of yourself out to fit in. Check out Fair Other Work at penharper.itch.io. Sydney Whittington as Cassidy. Sydney can be found on our Discord server, which is linked in the show notes, and on Twitter at Sydney_Wit. She's also a contributing editor and occasional guest player for the Orpheus Protocol, a cosmic horror espionage actual play podcast. Cameron Robertson as Emma. Cameron can be found on Twitter at MidnightMusic13 and on Instagram at Reading_and_Dreaming. Cameron is also a player on Tabletop Squadron, a Star Wars Edge of the Empire actual play podcast. And Nick Robertson as narrator. Nick can be found on Twitter at Alias58. Nick is also the GM for Tabletop Squadron. Nick can also be found as a player on the Orpheus Protocol. This podcast features the musical talents of Dora Violet and Arnie Parrott. You can find Dora at facebook.com/DoraViolet. You can find Arnie at atptunes.com. The official artwork for this podcast was created by Rashid Alaroca, who can be found on Instagram and ArtStation at RashidJRS. You can follow the Patna on Twitter at @akosap_podcast or visit the website www.akosap.com. That's akosap.com. To further support the show, consider joining the Patreon at www.patreon.com/akosap, where we'll be bringing you weekly content, including bonus episodes, campfire conversations, and other fun rewards. Until you tune back, stay bold and stay kind.